Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. This program is devoted to those of you who know, as I do, that there's something dreadfully wrong with the political, religious, media, military, and economic institutions which control our world. As a result of this, we are going to look behind the headlines. We're going to consider what is happening that will influence this world over the next 10 to 15 years. And we're going to turn to God, ultimately in our second hour, and consider what he has to say regarding his covenant, because it's the only way to escape the hellish conditions that are going to befall our planet during this next decade. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion, understand the means behind the madness, it's toll-free, 877-300-7645. A couple of items in the news struck some interest with me. The first is from New Delhi. I'm going to tread into the don't go there zone. But here I bravely jump into the pool. India's Supreme Court overturned a historic lower court decision on homosexuality Wednesday, making consensual same-sex acts once again a crime in the world's most populous democracy. May I begin by saying we have so inappropriately used the term democracy that the vast preponderance of people have no clue what it means. You know, to be a democracy, the people have to legislate. They don't choose representatives to legislate. They themselves legislate. You know, the initiative process in California, if it wasn't for the fact that the California Supreme Court routinely usurps the will of the people and overturns them, if they were on every major issue in terms of negotiating with teachers' unions and government employee unions and making decisions on how much to pay in welfare and Medicare and Medicaid and the like, that would be an example of a democracy. But the initiatives are too few and far between. Californians still elect representatives who enact most legislation, and therefore it's not a democracy. America is not a democracy. Should America become a democracy, then it would become mob rule. It would become the tyranny of the majority over the minority. It's very close to that now, but that is not what America is. There is no democracy in the world today. Matter of fact, there isn't any community in the world today where the people are well enough educated to actually conduct a democracy, because the individual people, they have to understand economics so that they can make decisions on central banks and fiat currencies and monetary policy. They have to have some understanding of the world geopolitical relations as they exist today, so they can make decisions on defense and military spending as well as State Department actions. They would have to have understanding of business so they could make decisions on the regulation and taxation of business. So many things that people would have to have not only a knowledge of but an understanding of for a democracy to work in today's world. And there is no country that even remotely approaches that kind of population in terms of education and understanding. So India is not a democracy. Now, as for this rule, the court ruled that India's colonial-era homosexuality law, colonial-era means when they were under the control of the British, this law was first enacted. It said that gay sex is against the order of nature and punishable by up to 10 years in prison, and that initial colonial-era ban on homosexuality was constitutional. I want to criticize that once again. Gay sex is uncommon, but it is not against the order of nature. It is the very fact that homosexuality appeals to approximately 2% of the population, although it is growing today, and bisexual sex is hugely expanding today, especially amongst women. It is such a minority that participate in homosexual sex that it is definitely abnormal. and therefore to normalize it, to give it the stigma that it is normal, is to deny the facts. It's like saying that India is a democracy when it's just not true. You can't say that homosexual sex is normal because it's not. It's abnormal. The facts define it. 2% of the population doing something is abnormal. 98% of the population doing something else, that's normal. By the very definition of those terms. Now, as it relates to against the order of nature, those of you who have pets, particularly dogs, have probably noticed that a dog is fairly indiscriminate. They're as happy to go up and snuggle up against a female dog, if you have a female dog, as they are a male dog. In fact, most are more comfortable around female dogs, around female dogs. I don't want to get into the biology of it. I don't know it, quite frankly. But I can tell you that in nature, while the overwhelming preponderance, again, is that males fight males for the opportunity to reproduce through females, there is a fair amount of same-sex attraction in the animal world. This statement is the consequence of homosexual sex in India. It's punishable by 10 years in prison. This quote, all religious communities, Muslims, Christians, Hindus, have said that it is an unnatural act, said Mukbul, a lawyer representing the religious groups. It is stunning that Christianity is anti-homosexuality. Barely mentions it. He mentions it twice. He's not fond of it. He considers it inappropriate for a man to have sex with another man. But it didn't make his top 10 list. Adultery did, and you don't see many countries where there is a law with prison sentences for adultery. And for a Christian group to be up in arms against homosexuality and not adultery is purely hypocritical. Now, as it relates to Muslims, what's interesting is that the Quran's depiction of the multiple virgins in paradise does not only include females. Now, heaven is only for males. According to Muhammad, women spend their time in hell suspended by their breasts for being ungrateful to their husbands. But men aren't just satiated with perpetual female virgins, but also with male virgins. And that there is a surah in the Quran that speaks of how the homosexual sex is going to be not only permissible in Allah's paradise, but all of the stigma that would go against it on earth is suddenly removed. So it is hypocritical for Muslims to be against homosexuality. Moreover, in most Islamic countries, we see this vividly in Afghanistan. When the Americans would liberate a town from the Taliban, and they would send the Afghan police in, and therefore we would have witnesses as to what is occurring. One of the first things that the Afghan police would do would go door to door into the community to find the most attractive adolescent boys. They would pull those boys out of their homes in a game called Bachi Ba, and they would gang rape them, and they would gang rape them over a period of weeks in a purely homosexual act. Now, here's my view on this, and you can take it or leave it. It doesn't mean my view is right or wrong or anything else. My view is that people ought to be able to do whatever they choose to do. I'm an advocate of choice and of free will. And so if somebody wishes to use drugs, they should be able to do so. If somebody wishes to be homosexual, they should be able to be homosexual. We should not attack people for making poor choices. So long as people's poor choices don't influence the lives of others in a negative way, they should be allowed to make those poor choices. while we should have an educational system that encourages people to make the right choices. My only issue with homosexuality is when it's promoted as being normal, when it's not, and when it's being advocated in university and media settings and political settings as a cause celeb, as something that is good, when in fact it is unhealthy. Homosexual men don't live as long as heterosexual men. So, I'm appalled by India's actions. If a person chooses to be homosexual, if that is their choice, well, I don't understand the choice. I don't concur with the choice. It's not my choice. Everybody ought to be able to choose to do in their private lives whatever they wish to do, so long as they're not negatively influencing others. And we ought not try to be moral police, particularly in the bedroom. We have Larry on the line. I want to share a related story, Larry, here. The lawmakers in the small South American nation of Uruguay voted Tuesday to legalize marijuana. In the move, Uruguay leaps to the forefront of nations that have sought alternatives to criminal anti-narcotics enforcement. Frustrated with the human and economic costs of fighting a drug war that rarely shows any signs of progress. Well, I will criticize India for their most recent legislation. I'm going to applaud Uruguay. Now, I have I'm the ultimate square when it comes to narcotics. I've just realized that I had a fairly compulsive personality, and that if I liked it, it would be difficult for me to stop using it. So I just figured that the smartest thing for me relative to narcotics was just never to play. And so, well, I've been around it, and I was in a fraternity in school and saw a lot of it being used. I can't tell you what the pleasures are associated with these drugs, because I've never used them. But I, just as I think that people ought to be able to do whatever they want to behind closed doors, if they're not influencing the lives in a negative way of others, people ought to be able to choose to eat, to consume, to smoke, to ingest, whatever they want, while we educate them to make better choices. We'll be back with Larry after the commercial break. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We have Larry on the line. Something I must have said must have tripped a trigger, Larry, whether it be India on criminalizing homosexuality or Uruguay legalizing the use of marijuana.
Well, I have to be honest with you. I don't care too much about one or the other.
Okay.
It's simple as this. Uruguay is saying, okay, criminalizing marijuana. I don't use drugs. Haven't for many, 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 many years. I was in high school in America, so sure, I smoked pot, you know. And I don't care one way or another about it. It's just kind of a goofy drug to me. I think there are a lot of benefits to hemp, on the other hand. You know,
I actually have a significant stake in this one. I'm going to say a really significant stake in this one. Now, I'm probably a little older than you are, so back in the time I was in high school, the big thing was drinking beer. My view is that America has become a prison state, a police state and a prison
That's
state.
That's true. Oh,
and,
yes, absolutely.
And that, we ought not put people in prison for using drugs, and that our prison population is way out of whack against the rest of the world.
I agree with that.
Okay. The second issue is we're spending gargantuan amounts of money limiting Americans' freedom, fighting a war against drugs that by every rational standard is failing. The purity of drugs is getting, drugs are getting more pure, they're becoming more prevalent, they're becoming more cheaply available, and they're more widely used now than ever, which means that all of the money that we have wasted, all the people we've imprisoned, all the programs we've enacted, all the resources we've squandered on this have been wholly ineffective, and so why continue to do that? My view is that that life is full of challenges. And if you're going to handicap yourself in life by being inebriated, that it's going to make it all the more difficult for you to make good choices in what is already a difficult experience. And that it's stupid, therefore, to use any drug, including alcohol, to excess, or so that it limits your ability to perform,
I thought you said you're criminalized.
No, decriminalized. Decriminalized.
Okay, thank you. Okay, good. Yeah, I don't have any problem with that at all.
Yeah, I'm in favor of that. I think all drugs, even the horrible drugs, heroin, crystal meth, roofies, and all of those things, I think ought to be legal and yet vociferously condemned. But condemned using evidence and reason.
Yeah, I think there are powers that be that have a great stake in keeping things like that illegal. One, you got the police state that you're talking about enlarging.
Right.
Two, you've got a judge that was recently arrested. I think it was up in Pennsylvania. I'm not sure about that, but I think it was Pennsylvania. That was actually selling teenagers to the prison system. I think he had made something like $9 million or something. And now this clown finally got 28 years because he got caught. Plus, I think that there are powers that be that make a lot of money in the drug trade.
Oh, yeah. Well, look at the Kennedy clan. The Kennedys are considered the closest thing to royalty in America, and Joseph Kennedy made his fortune as a bootlegger because when something is illegal, and for a while in America, alcohol was illegal, when something is illegal, there's great fortunes to be made in providing it. And so the government has this this tendency to criminalize activities that make fortunes for favored individuals, and it ought not be the case. If you were to decriminalize it, then you wouldn't have the kind of malfeasance that goes along with the Kennedy clan.
At the same time, what you were talking about too. I'm in total agreement. I thought you said criminalized.
No, they decriminalize it. Yeah, they decriminalize
it. I did not understand where you would be.
Right. Yeah, I've got more than my share of flaws. But one of my flaws is not drugs. I do not take drugs, and so I'm not advocating the decriminalizing narcotics because I'm a user.
Because you're a pothead, no, obviously.
No, I'm advocating it because what we have in place now is disastrous, and that is the best, fairest, most reasonable solution that offers the most freedom of choice to individuals. And so I think you ought to have freedom of choice, but an educational system that accurately presents the pros and cons of doing anything and everything. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. One of the things that I find especially revolting is the maneuvering of the media, in this case Time magazine, in elevating that which is counterproductive, working against the common people. Now, Time magazine, when Barack Hussein Obama was first elected, they literally presented him as God. They said it is as if he is God, speaking of the messianic nature of this resolutely dishonest and counterproductive president. Today, Time magazine has named Pope Francis Time's Person of the Year. They have done so because they said he's taken the papacy out of the palace and into the streets. This pope is a Marxist.
Well, this is why I called in, Yada.
Okay. Let me just phrase this, and then I want you to respond. Well, the Roman Catholic Church is amongst the most repulsive and counterproductive institutions in human history. If you were to look at the last 50 years, there has been one positive thing that the Roman Catholic Church has done. And that is that a pope, I think it was John Paul, worked with Margaret Thatcher to motivate and work within the Roman Catholic Church in Poland to stand up against communism, and that was one of the catalysts for breaking up the Soviet bloc. And if you want to give the Roman Catholic Church a kudo for something, that would be it. And so this numbskull, who I swear is at least one suit shy of a full deck, is now, in all of his rhetoric, trying to take the world back to socialism. You know, the world's tried that. And while the rhetoric sounds wonderful, that Marxist ideas are good for the little guy, and they rein in the power and the wealth of the evil's successful individual. While the rhetoric sounds wonderful to the masses, the fact of the matter is, it always works the opposite way. That in a communist country, the average schmo has no freedoms, has no opportunity, has no life worth living. They're treated as if they were a slave. That's the reality of a Marxist society. Look at China when it was communist, and now look at China once they have deployed free enterprise. Look at Russia, which was a debtor nation that was living on contributions from the world, even in food, when it was communist, and now it is one of the richest nations on earth. Look at America, which was once a free enterprise nation and was the most prosperous nation on earth, and now that it has invested all manner of Marxist ideals, it is the world's largest debtor nation. And now this
These are not an accident, Yada. I mean, that's how it works. They know it. They've studied it for years. They've also studied human nature for years. And that is why I called in, because I saw the new communist Jesuit-trained pope is having his ass kissed by the CFR-operated Time magazine. You know, and it's great that this worldly man that pretends to act as an intermediary to God has another feather in his worldly cap, but it is man of the year, and man's the operative word there.
Yeah.
So I would just, you know, it's coming. And
yes,
they're one of the evil forces at the forefront of it. I don't know how well India's program is going to go over with the Jesuits.
here's the reality of this, and I think you've already cornered in on it. The reality is that as we move through these next 13 years to the precipice of the tribulation, we're going to find world religion and world politics and world militarism and world economic forces all in collusion. And so here you have the media and politics and economics and religion all as one, presenting Marxist ideals as that which is the man of the year, that which is noble, that which is wonderful for the man on the street, that which takes the leader out of the palace and into the streets as being good. This is the unification of religion, of economics, of militarism, and of politics that is going to be the future that awaits the world, and the world's going to lap it up.
They already are.
Yeah, they already are. And I want to tell you, just if you happen to be a Roman Catholic and you're celebrating this, then from Yahweh's teachings, I can say emphatically that you're going to die. That choice will lead to your demise and to the demise of all of those that you love. That if you believe this pope, if you trust in Roman Catholicism, you're going to die. Now, the one way for you to be a Roman Catholic and not die is a far worse option, which is you can be a Roman Catholic priest or a apologist for Roman Catholicism, in which case you won't die, but you will spend eternity with your fellow religious proponents and leaders. But that eternity is not going to be with Yahweh. It'll be with HaSatan, the adversary. Because your religion is purely pagan, it's Babylonian, it is revolting in every possible way. It is an abomination to God. Larry, so
well, there's little, there's little doubt about that. I mean, Yahweh is not a religious deity. He doesn't want worship. He certainly doesn't want worship tied in with all kinds of pagan ideals, which is what Catholicism really is.
Oh, yeah, it begins with
a lot of pagan worship.
Yeah. Yeah, it begins with their worship of Mary and the statues to Mary in all of their cathedrals. It's Semiramis. It's the Queen of Heaven and the Mother of God in the Babylonian religion. It followed through in every pagan religion throughout time. They always depict their little Jesus, I'll put Jesus in quotes, in the two ways that he is easily controlled, as an infant in his mommy's arms, totally dependent on his mommy, or affixed through the palms of his hands to a pagan cross. That's the way they always depict him, because their desire is to manipulate his image to empower themselves. It is a repulsive organization. My sons are reasonably open-minded and thoughtful. Both of them came to the conclusion that if you were to name the single most negative institution in human history, the institution that has caused the most harm to humankind, it is the Roman Catholic Church. Now, I don't want this to be anyone to mistake me as who may be a new listener, as being anti-Catholic and pro-Protestant Christianity. That is not the case. If you are a Protestant Christian, then you have imbibed 95% of the poison that has been promoted by Roman Catholicism. You're going to celebrate the Roman Catholic pagan festival of the birth of the Son at Christmas. There is no sanction for that. Scripture line, as you know, Larry, Yahweh laughs at it. He mocks Christianity and mocks Christmas. He also mocks Easter, which is named after Astarte, the Babylonian queen of heaven.
He doesn't mock it. He condemns it.
Yes.
As an abomination.
Well,
that's one of the things.
Yeah,
that
Christmas, I think he actually. I mean, is there a significant difference between God mocking something and condemning it? I really don't think so. But beyond that, with Christmas, I see him actually mocking it. You know, what are you doing, dragging this stupid tree in and decorating it, and you know, this tree. What a moron you are.
That's infinitely tied to Ishtar, to Easter.
Oh, of course. Yeah, because 9 months after Easter, the mother of God, the Queen of Heaven, is impregnated with the rays of the sun, and 9 months later, she gives birth to the Son of the Sun on Christmas Day. It's pagan right to its core, as is Sunday worship, as is the Trinity. All of this is purely pagan, and so if you're a Protestant Christian or an Orthodox Christian by some other group other than Roman Catholicism, like the Russian Orthodox or Greek Orthodox or Copt in the case of Egypt, then your fate is no different than the fate of a Roman Catholic. At the end of your mortal existence, if you are a Christian in any form, if you rely on the church, if you support the church, if you believe the church, if you are reliant on your New Testament, at the end of your mortal existence, you're going to die. And this man, Pope Francis, is leading a billion Catholics to their demise, both spiritually, their souls will cease to exist, and financially. That's a bad thing for a person named Man of the Year.
Well, communism is a bad thing. And it's sad that really the powers that be control most of the major media. I mean, they don't control this show, but they control major media.
Yeah.
And it's really a lot of talking points and misdirection and misinformation and directing us and directing worldly events in the way they wish it would go. And clearly the powers that be want the people to live like pigs, while at the top they live like the elite that they are.
Right. Yeah, just like in feudal Europe when the Catholic Church and the monarchies were united in empowering themselves, enriching themselves, and suppressing the people. That's where the elite want the world to go. It's interesting that in Yanwa's presentation of the Yovel, and his economic policy for Yisrael, there is a mix of what we would call free enterprise and socialism. Every 50 years, land returns to and is redistributed, which would be a socialistic idea, except for the fact that it's not redistributed to the state; it's redistributed to people. Loans are forgiven, and those who are indebted, those who are slaves, are freed.
Yeah, but I can see why that would be, because that takes away from the notions of empire building.
Correct.
Of running the world.
Correct.
A whole lot of things.
Oh, right. Yeah, absolutely.
It brings people down to reality, doesn't it?
Gives everybody a fair chance and a fair opportunity, but it doesn't limit the opportunity of the individual during their lifetime, which creates prosperity and innovation and progress. It's the best of all worlds, but communism, as it is deployed in our world today, suffocates freedom. It suffocates prosperity. It is a deadly dogma, and we'll speak to that in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We have Larry on the line with us. Larry, one of the things that is deeply troubling to me about the myth of socialist secular humanism and therefore communism is there's two aspects of it. One we've already addressed, which is that rather than serving the man on the street, it treats the man on the street as if they were a serf, as if they were a slave. They have all of their freedoms and all of their prosperity are taken from them. And so it has the opposite effect of the promised theorized effect. But the second is that socialist secular humanists will demean religion as calling it the source of war and of killing, and that they will demean killing in the name of God. And while you and I would also demean killing in the name of God, and we would demean religion in general, there has never been any human doctrine that has been as deadly and as destructive as socialist secular humanism. You look at the last 100 years, and communists and socialists have killed well over 100 million people.
That's right.
And so it's the deadliest dogma that man has ever conceived.
It was also funded by the Catholic Church, wasn't it? I mean, so you've got the religious tie in there, too. You know, what I would say is this. When the media fawns all over a national figure or a worldly figure for very long, and I don't care if it's the Pope, Mother Teresa, Billy Graham, or Nelson Mandela, okay, you can count on them in the end being a destructive force.
Oh, you look at Mother Teresa. By any moral, rational, informed standard,
hypocrite.
She was a complete hypocrite.
She was a personality.
Right. She was at best an agnostic. She was a horrible individual to be around. Extraordinarily condescending and nasty. And much of the funds that she raised were not used in the manner that she is credited of having used them. She was a complete hypocrite. And, you look at the world's fawning over Nelson Mandela. Now, there are aspects of Nelson Mandela that are certainly noble. But you can't disassociate the man from his past. He was the head of a communist terrorist organization, and
his wife, her signature move was necklacing people. Look,
right.
I don't have anything to do with
And what a necklacing people means is that you take those who don't support your cause and you soak a used tire in gasoline. And then you incapacitate the person so that they're tied up, and you put this around their neck, and you light it a fire. That was the signature move of the African National Congress.
Well, and he also ran around singing about killing the Bora, And if they want to kill the borah, then go ahead, kill the borah. Then you can rely on the GMO foods that the United Nations will bring you to kill you. And that's that. And you know, no, Nelson Mandela was a net minus. He took a country that was fairly well ran, moving ahead at a pretty good pace, and turned it into one of the worst-run countries in the world by any standard. And, you know, he did it through communism, he did it through lies, he did it through murder, and he walked around, you know, asking for handouts everywhere he went. You know, if
but
you think that he looked
but he
like
had a, but he had a very nice smile.
Yeah, he looked like Morgan Freeman, kind of, and knew how to say, "We love you," you know, over and over again. And so what?
Yeah, yeah. It's to call him a liberator is asinine.
Right.
It's particularly when you look at the overall conditions that exist in Africa today. There's a an interesting.
It's not only that. It's the whole I advance the idea of murdering white people. Frankly, as a white man, and I'm not a racist, but I'm not going to sit here any longer and pretend that people who want my people dead are okay with me, because they're not.
Yeah, and that is one of the great myths in the world today is that in the media, racism is almost always depicted as white against black. And yet, there is far more deep-seated racism in black versus white and hatred of blacks of whites than there is the other way around. And the murder statistics are hugely disproportionate in terms of the number of blacks that kill whites versus the other way around. Let's at least deal with reality.